I have one sort of larger reading today as opposed to two smaller ones, and I'm probably going to mangle the website, but it was Satrakshita. It's clearly Japanese, and I can't say it well, so I apologize. But it's a longish dialogue between somebody who asked a question of his master and a guru, and the guru responds on the concept of interdependence. So the individual asks, one of the essential laws of nature seems to be relationship interdependence. Please, Osho, say something about relationship. Vasamati, they are not synonymous. Relationship is one thing, interdependence, totally another. Relationship means you are separate, you are independent, and so is the other, and you decide to relate. Relationship is not interdependence. It is a contract between two independent persons. Hence, all relationships are false, because basically, independence is false. Nobody is independent, and if you are not independent, how can you relate? With whom can you relate? Life is interdependence. Nobody is independent, not for a single moment can you exist alone. You need the whole existence to support you. Each moment you are breathing it in and out. It is not relationship, it is utter interdependence. Remember, I'm not saying it is dependence, because the idea of dependence, again, presumes that we are independent. If we are independent, then dependence is possible. But both are impossible. It is interdependence. What do you say? Are waves independent from the ocean, or are they dependent on the ocean? Neither is true. They are the ocean, neither independent or dependent. The ocean cannot exist without the waves cannot exist without the ocean. They are utterly one. It is a unity. And so is our whole life. We are waves of a cosmic ocean of consciousness. That means love can have three dimensions. One is that of dependence, and that's what happens with the majority of people. The husband is dependent on the wife is dependent on the husband. They exploit each other, they dominate each other, they possess each other, they reduce each other to a commodity. In 99% of the cases, that is what is happening in the world. I'm not sure I agree with that, but that's okay. He goes, but to go on, that's why love, which can open the gates of paradise, in this context, only opens the gates of hell. The second possibility is love between two independent persons, and that too happens once in a while, but that too brings misery, because there is constant conflict. No adjustment is possible. Both are so independent, and nobody is ready to compromise to adjust with the other. Poets, artists, thinkers, scientists, those who live in a kind of independence, at least in their minds, are impossible to live with. I'm a scientist, I get that. They are eccentric people to live with. They give freedom to the other, but their freedom looks more like indifference than like freedom. Looks more as if they don't care, as if it doesn't matter to them. They leave each other to their own spaces. Relationship seems to be only superficial. They are afraid to go deeper into one another, because they are more attached to their freedom than to love, and they don't want to compromise. And the third possibility is of interdependence. That happens very rarely, but whenever it happens, a part of paradise falls on the earth. Two persons, neither independent nor dependent, but in a tremendous synchronicity, as if breathing for each other, one soul in two bodies. Whenever that happens, love has happened. Only call this love. The other two are not really love. They're just arrangements, social, psychological, biological, but arrangements. The third is something spiritual. Please close your eyes for our moment of meditation. We began today with the sound of spring. We know it's out there somewhere. It's coming, we promise. But as we think about nature, as we think about our friends sitting next to us here in the pews, as we think about our community at large and about this planet as a whole, remember the interdependence, the love that we bring to the relationship we have with all of those aspects of our lives. So as we go forth today into the next few weeks, next few months, into the future, think about love and think about our interdependence with each other. And for a moment of silence. So clearly today's theme is about interdependence. And I want to share with you a little story, sort of how I got into this idea. And kind of take you on a little journey, literally and figuratively, I hope. My girlfriend Rox and I sort of got it into our heads that touring the national parks would be a great idea this summer. And I'm not sure where she first got the idea, but once she catches that bug, she is pretty tenacious about accomplishing whatever it is she wants to accomplish. For example, this is a woman who rode dressage at the Pan Am Games. She was in the first class of women after Title IX to get a Division I scholarship to play, you know, college-level sports. She was a fencer. She taught herself to sail, lived in the Caribbean for about 2 years. She is a dive master and has logged countless hours underwater in a blissful slice of heaven on earth. So you know how it is when you love someone, right? You take a look in their eyes and you know you get that look that tells you something pretty amazing is going to happen, and she was right. So I figured it was time to watch that Ken Burns documentary on the National Park System. It was on, I've had in my queue on Netflix for about 3 years. That's a big commitment, right? Because it's like 5 or 6 installments of about 2 hours each, and the kids would, you know, as I sat down to watch it, the kids would come up, oh, that national park thing again. I'm like, it's just part 5 now. It's all good, you know? So I figured, okay, time to sit down. So I had time over break, hallelujah, and figured I'm going to pull out my knitting, and I have to thank Sandy Shaner for that new passion that I have. Probably addiction is probably the better word. And I press play. So breathtaking, though, really just doesn't even do it justice. I mean, this is an amazing story with photos and footage, and it weaves just amazing things. It's just stunning to watch. And I really finally understood why Rox was suddenly so excited and driven to have this experience. And so, of course, I was on board, no questions asked. And as I was watching this, I was drawn to this really interesting narrative in the first episode, and they were discussing the individuals who really helped push this idea into fruition, people like John Muir and Teddy Roosevelt, among many. Without their vision, we really would not have the park system that we have today. It's called our best idea for a reason. It's a great idea to have parts of nature available for people to experience unspoiled, or at least as unspoiled as we can make it. And we're pretty darn lucky, because not only do we have these national parks here that are amazing wonders, but we've really influenced the global community. There are national parks in all countries, in different areas, and so we've certainly influenced that dialogue about reserving nature and keeping it sacred. So I'm hearing these words, and I'm listening to it, and I'm knitting away, and suddenly they start talking about the Declaration of Independence. Like, okay, I grew up in Connecticut, you know, it's part of, you know, Revolutionary War history. This is always kind of interesting to me. And they say that the Declaration of Independence sort of, the national park system sort of personifies that, in that this incredible natural beauty that's out there is something that's available to every American. That's not like it's available only to the rich. Everybody has access to it. Everybody does. It's our park system. We own it as citizens of the United States. It's ours. And this is a consistent theme throughout this whole documentary. This is our park system. We own this. You know, and I'm smiling, and popcorn's in my mouth, and I'm knitting away some more. And they go on to talk about that it's not just the Declaration of Independence, it's a Declaration of Interdependence. And I thought, okay, let's see where they're going with this. Mm-hmm. That we need the parks as much as the parks needed us to care and support them and keep them sacred for the world to behold. And at first we were just, the park systems were more about nature and preserving nature, and then ultimately became about preserving the animals, and then ultimately sort of restoring them back to their natural beauty. And you watch this evolution of the park systems and their purpose throughout the whole documentary. We hold, in national parks, we hold these parks and nature very sacred for the world to behold, so everybody can share in it. And I get this, right? I'm a Unitarian. So John Muir, who was a Scotsman, he first came to Yosemite, and he talked about how he would walk among the cliffs and the waterfalls and the valleys of Yosemite, and he experienced God. He was very clear about this, that the divine was in all things. It was not external to us, but it was in us and around us, sort of all at the same time. And this is coming from a man who memorized the Bible and whose father was a very strict Presbyterian minister. I mean, we get this, right? And so I'm smiling some more, because this is a very familiar theme in my life. Because the fire and the brimstone of that vengeful God really doesn't make a lot of sense in the context of the babbling brook and the misty sunrise over the waterfall. How do you see a vengeful God in that? That's that old sort of Old Testament version of the way we would view a God or a divine power. So it goes on further. I'm now hooked, for sure. Our parks illustrate the interdependence between man and nature. Good. They're inextricably united. And I'm going, just as I'm ready to say in my head, sounds very UU to me. Lo and behold, the narrator Peter Coyote goes on to say that the park system's early advocates included people like Henry David Thoreau, Ralph Waldo Emerson. What a shock. So we've had a voice in that process. We had a voice somewhere influencing, you know, this national park system. I thought that's pretty cool. And I'm giggling to myself, of course, going, we're everywhere, ha ha ha. But how the heck do we get ourselves stuck in the middle of these things? In these movements and these ideas, UUs tend to be sort of right there in the middle, in the midst of it all. Is it because we have a passion? Is it because we have a big mouth? Is it because we have vision? Is it something greater than that? Or is it even something maybe more simplistic than that? So I'm still trying to figure it out, but I figured I'd share my thoughts with you guys today on this. I sat back over the next couple of days and I was thinking about interdependence and how UUs seem to migrate towards this concept. Even in our online sermon a few weeks ago, when we had the Snowmageddon, it had me thinking about how these old biblical ways, which many of us were raised in, and I was raised Catholic, you know, how many of us shudder and pull away because there's something that is very challenging in that fire and brimstone idea of God and goodliness. There's a sense of dependence on a vengeful God, and that we must have dominion over nature. But there's really little discussion about interdependence until you get more into the New Testament, right? And that wonderful teacher Jesus says, whatsoever you do to the least of your brothers, you do unto me. And that's the Jesus that I like, the one who really cares about his fellow man and recognizes that by hurting another, you hurt him or you hurt me. Because we're all interconnected. That's really what he was espousing. And he espouses love very consistent with the vision, I think, that was in that initial reading for today. That love comes from the respect for the interdependence that we have, that I can affect you and you affect me, and love is the thing that sort of joins us. So as UUs, we're really inspired by this interdependence of life. We see, you know, all paths as good, even those paths that we look at from afar because we rejected them as not being quite so consistent with our values. We sit here among pagans and atheists and Christians and Buddhists and Hindus, and we sit here comfortably. We don't give it a second thought. We want to learn about Hinduism? Cool. How about Islam or Wicca? Bring it on. And there's something in our thirst for understanding that pushes us to continue to dig and to learn. And I think interdependence is at that core. I believe that it's the unique gift that UUs bring to the world. So how does this interdependence manifest itself? Well, I see it in three ways: with nature, with each other interpersonally, and then communally, from group to group, country to country, faith tradition to faith tradition. We create bridges, I think, because we migrate to the middle, we create bridges to the possible. So let me start with nature. And needless to say, you can't start a discussion about nature without talking about Camp Fest. So it always works out that way. And just a push for Camp Fest, it's going to be that Sunday in the last June to right through 4th of July. So anyway, last year at Camp Fest, I sat down chatting with Chrissy Chapman, and we were discussing all sorts of things, you know, the philosophies of life, hanging by the pool, catching up on life and what's going on with each other. And we were talking about a book that she was reading called Zubiquity. Needless to say, it got uploaded into my Kindle as soon as I could get home to the internet. It's a fascinating story about how medical doctors and veterinarians, who typically have worked at odds with each other, they don't talk to each other, right? Because there's the people doctors and then there's the animal doctors.
others.
And so there's this sort of elitism in that ideal. But they've started a dialogue, because what we realize is we've learned a lot from veterinary medicine about how it informs the way we have and treat the illnesses that we have. Think about it this way. The animal population manifests all sorts of illnesses and diseases. We're animals. We're pretty sophisticated ones, but we're animals too. And we share an enormous amount of DNA with swine and chimpanzees. So doesn't it make sense that we would share pathologies, whether it's stressors or illnesses or diseases, what have you? We do. There are clear parallels. And now that these both sides are talking to each other interdependently, it's helping more and more advancement in terms of medical science. It's a pretty amazing book. So you'd say, well, of course that makes sense, but if you really didn't believe in this interdependence of our existence, you probably wouldn't buy that. And I think historically for a long time, people didn't buy that. Western medicine has always been about, not been really about the integration of, mind, body, soul. And Western medicine's moving more towards that nowadays, but the Eastern philosophies and the Eastern medical traditions had it right, that all these things work together, our energies are all together very interdependently. So many individuals believe that the primacy of man is important over the importance of nature. Our early naturalists, however, believe in the sacred and the divine in nature. Our First Nation populations, the Maori, the Native Americans, the Pacific Islanders, Alaskans, they all thrive with an interdependence with nature. Pagan and Wicca rituals are centered, rock solid, in finding the divine within each other and in our connection with nature. We all know the concept of the butterfly that flaps its wings in Illinois affects the rainforest in Brazil. And all you have to do is look at the water crisis in West Virginia to know that stewardship of nature is essential to our survival. We couldn't exist without nature, and nature has to be preserved and protected as long as a man walks on the planet, and by our very presence changes the dynamics of the energy flows of our natural existence. So on one of my many trips to Columbus, Ohio, to see rocks, we decided to attend a service at the Unitarian Church in Clintonville. It is among the largest UU congregations in the U.S. I thought it'd be a nice opportunity to see how other churches work, see if the energy that I love at First UU exists in other places. And it's there. The sermon that day was a blessing of the animals. And the woman in the pulpit gave an impassioned plea why she's a vegan and an animal activist. And I understand her passion. She made an eloquent case for the sacredness of the animal rights, and it made me stop for a few minutes. I've never really considered myself an active Green Party member. I admire those who are, but there are so many wars to fight and battles to hash out when it comes to political action and public policy that despite the passion I feel for nature and hiking and geocaching, it's just not where I put my political capital at this point in time in my life. It's not that it's unimportant to me, but in the end, there are only so many hours in the day. But I try to live by example. I recycle, and I would compost if I didn't have a rental house with a restrictive homeowners association. I garden, I eat organic when I can afford it. I try to keep my footprint small, but it's really hard in today's disposable society. But I do even have some clothes in my closet that are older than my kids, including shoes. So I do try to do my part to not put any extra pressure on the environment. And I've also become more mindful, and while I'm eating more vegan meals, mostly for health reasons, I'm also mindful of the impact my choice has on animals as a whole, and it feels good to be able to do that. So it doesn't really surprise me that many UUs are animal activists or Green Party members or share the joys of Walden Pond. We have a unique interdependence with nature. We love nature, truly love nature, as the reading today implies. The real love that comes in the interdependence and a mutual respect and caring so that we can feel the joy that John Muir felt the first time he saw Yosemite. And as the book Zubiquity shares with us, we can learn from each other, not just from dominating nature for the sake of domination, that we can learn and support each other. The second point is our interdependence with each other. Going back to the teacher Jesus and his message, whatsoever you do to the least of your brothers, our social justice missions are just another manifestation of interdependence. I think this is pretty self-evident. But it goes deeper and further than that, I think. In many ways, I see the way that we truly care for each other through our caring committees, our food ministries, through our smaller social networks and service networks, such as the Anna D's and the Romeos. Our Sadly, our chalice circles have faded a bit, but we do have active support networks through our social media. I am a little concerned that their disappearance has created a bit of a void, especially for those who do not have computer access, because interdependence requires face-to-face contact. It's necessary to remind us of our human nature. But I love that social media can really help us connect in ways that we didn't before. We can instantly mobilize a food ministry for one of our own who's struggling with a loss pretty quickly. Hi, baby. We can put out a call for help, and someone says, I can help you move, or I can help you set up a massage room, or I can babysit, or I can provide a space for a friend to crash for the evening. And as hard as it is to ask for help, when we ask for help, it is a gift we give each other, both in the giving and in the receiving, and even in the way that we say thank you for that support. I know this kind of caring for each other in a church community is not a uniquely UU thing, of course not, but it is a UUism. But what is a UUism is that we are all accepted as we are, no questions asked. Old and young, married and single, gay, straight, trans, cisgender, deist or atheist, pagan or Buddhist, we are also very different, which is not the norm that you'd see in more mainstream churches. And we love those differences. We celebrate those differences. Whereas it took my parents some 10 plus years to accept me as a lesbian, you all took it in stride and accepted me and my identity without question. I don't know if you realize what a gift that is. Again, our interdependence draws us to each other in a way that is beautiful and warm and accepting without fail. And I believe we're drawn here and away from other traditions because our interdependence drives us to seek out a space that values this trait in a deeper way. This is not to say that other traditions don't have their strengths and values that are amazing and beautiful. They do. Our gift, though, is the continual emphasis we place on the love we have for each other. Inspire love, seek justice. The interdependence that is central to love. And I know for me, so many other faith traditions say, I love you, but you're going to hell. Just like Sherry Shepherd said the other day in the news, right? Big celebrity. I love all gay people, but you're all going to hell. So the nice thing is here, you stop simply at, I love you. No conditional clauses, no ifs, no buts. I love you. We share in the interdependent energy that connects all mankind, and we know when one of us is hurt, all of us hurt. When one of us is devalued, all of us is devalued. It's like a beautiful Venn diagram when we can't exist without the others. It's all part of that. It has to be there. Lastly, the interdependence of society at large. Our societies, countries, and other faith traditions are very interdependent. Many of our founding fathers, the earliest settlers who share the value of interdependence, were UUs. Is that a surprise? Yeah. Presidents were UUs. We get this. We aren't just a bunch of independent states. We are the United States. We need each other to make our country the amazing place that it is. It's not that we are without flaws. Goodness knows we've made our mistakes in the worldwide arena. But our founding fathers wanted tolerance and interdependence, not tyranny and dependence. We wanted to remove the dependence we had on Great Britain. From a political perspective, again, we know many, if not most, UUs share more liberal values. Again, we're drawn here because we know that individuals taking care of only themselves cannot survive in this world. The rugged individual who survived by their own mettle is a myth in so many ways. Those rugged individuals who pushed the edges of our country westward needed to depend on each other in famine and in poor weather and in other crises. Our forefathers had to be interdependent to survive in a strange new world. And think of the video that Kleber spoke of a few months ago as the marriage equality debate ran rampant through Illinois, the moral foundations of liberals and conservatives. Liberals share an openness to new experience and speak out for those who have no voice. That is Unitarian Universalism at its core. We care about the purity of the environment. Our current president, and even many presidents in the past, but our current president was raised in the UU tradition. And I think his ideals and programs are greatly influenced by that experience. Inspire love, seek justice. Again, I think the gift that UUs bring to the table is the love and acceptance of all faith traditions and cultures. We see what connects us, but we celebrate what makes us different. And as we continue to be true to our heart and our core, we find ourselves in the midst of that web that seeks understanding and love the tapestry that is our planet Earth and its occupants. Excuse me. So bringing this all together, I see you use the middle of that little Venn diagram, and that interdependent center that brings together differences and brings love to the table at its most basic. We are at the heart of the Venn diagram. We aren't in the middle because we're better than anyone else or that we're more important, but I think that by doing what we do best, by seeking understanding to enhance our core values, we end up in the middle because of that journey towards interdependence. We end up in the center of that. We migrate there. We're doers, we're not beers, and doers are continually looking for ways to connect and to support and to love ultimately. And ultimately we'll find themselves in the middle of it all because we see value in all those differences. And whether we're caring for the environment or our brothers and sisters or seeking understanding through other faith traditions and cultures, what we truly offer is our interdependence, and our interdependence is love, pure and simple. And as I tour the national parks this summer, I will think of John Muir and Ralph Waldo Emerson and Henry David Thoreau and thank them for valuing the interdependence of our existence with nature and each other, because that's our gift.